Good morning. Whether you are joining us online or here in this sanctuary, welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, Texas. We are a spiritual community dedicated to a free and responsible search for truth, meaning, and beauty. I am the Reverend Michelle LeGrave, your co-lead interim minister for a short time longer. I especially want to welcome those of you who are new to the congregation. If you are joining us remotely, and if you can, please say hello in the comments and let us know from where you are viewing the service, just because it's kind of fun to see how far y'all come from. Whether you are here in person or online, we invite you to fill out the online visitor form at austinuu.org. Simply click on worship, which will show you a link to the form. We would love to get to know you better if you are willing. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, wherever you find yourself on your life's journey, whichever your pronouns, whomever your ancestors, whatever your abilities or disabilities, whether you've walked in or rolled in or dialed in, whomever you love, you are welcome here. You belong here. We come from a long tradition of seeing a spark of the divine in every person. It is in this tradition, this living tradition, that I invite you to greet the holy among us, either in the comments or by turning to those around you.
Good morning again. I'm Reverend Chris Jimerson, co-lead minister. I invite you now to please join me in the words by which we light our chalice. This is the flame we hold in our hearts as we strive for justice for everyone. This is the light we shine upon systems of oppression until they are no more. This is the warmth we share with one another as our struggle becomes our salvation.
Our call to worship this morning is brief, and it comes from Peter Block. Understand that the task is to shift the demand from the right answer to the search for the right question. Let us worship.
One of the things that binds First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin together is that we have a common religious purpose. And for this religious community, that purpose is our mission. The congregation wrote it together, we emblazoned it on our wall, and those of us in worship every Sunday say it together so that we might more readily carry it in our hearts throughout the week. Let's do so now. Together, we nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice to build the beloved community. Our reading is from Letters to a Young Poet by Rilke. Have patience with everything that remains unsolved in your heart. Try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books written in a foreign language. Do not now look for the answers. They cannot now be given to you because you could not live them. It is a question of experiencing everything. At present, you need to live the questions. Perhaps you will gradually, without even noticing it, find yourself experiencing the answer some distant day.
Please find a comfortable place in your seats. Close your eyes if you feel comfortable doing so. And take a deep breath in as we join together in a time of prayer and meditation. This is the time in our service when we center ourselves together. We breathe together. In and out. Out and in. And breathing together, we sense one another's loving presence. Breathing in and breathing out, we follow our breath to a deeper place inside, a place of greater wisdom, a place where a spark of the divine resides within each of us. In and out, out and in. Breathing together, we enter now into a time of sacred silence, all the while remembering that nowhere Amen, and blessed be. I invite you now to light a candle, if you are so moved. Candles representing sorrow, joy, hope, remembrance, resilience, whatever it is that you need to honor during this moment in time. And as we light candles, I invite you to keep in your mind and heart members of our community who are ill or in sorrow, as well as those who are celebrating joys. Let us hold the silence together throughout this meditative time. Here we go.
Okay.
You ready?
I am ready, as I'm going to get.
What is your favorite aquatic animal and why?
That is such a Unitarian question. Wow. I would say the whale, because it's so documented how intelligent they are and how much they bond with one another that whales actually mourn the loss of their mates and companions, and that they actually help each other out and rescue each other. And not only that, they help out other species, including humans sometimes, and that's been well documented. So perhaps we can learn something about interconnectedness from their sense of interconnectedness.
I would say, similarly, the dolphin.
Is First UU fully staffed at the moment?
No.
We did not plant that, I'm just saying.
No, that was a legitimate question, and no, you are not. And we are struggling to staff people at appropriate salary levels as well as appropriate numbers of staff.
Agreed. What would you say is Unitarian Universalism's greatest calling in this moment in history?
That one is pretty easy. We have passed all the markers according to academic scholars who study political movements, and we are currently living in an authoritarian government. We meet all of those characteristics, and we are well on the way to fascism. So I would say our greatest calling right now is speaking up against fascism and keeping on, keeping on with all the good work we do.
So in a similar way, I would say that, as many of you know, we have centered our faith in the value of love. We have centered our faith in love. I call that a fierce love. And I think right now that fierce love is calling us more than ever to our anti-racism, anti-oppression, and multicultural work, because I think that racism and oppression and anti-multiculturalism are the tools of fascism right now. And I think theologically, as Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice to one is injustice to all. And as Collective Liberation says, we're all part of that interwoven tapestry. None of us can reach our most creative spiritual fulfillment until all of us can reach their most creative spiritual fulfillment. And so right now, I would say that that is our calling, and that fierce love calls us to not allow ourselves to get discouraged and fall into despair. My beau sent me some information from Pew Research recently about how discouraged so many of us really are becoming because of what's happening in our country, specifically related, especially to racism and oppression. And I would say, right now, I want to talk to my fellow cis white people. So if you don't identify as those, feel free to look at your smartphone or take a potty break. I won't be offended. I think that other folks have been doing the heavy lifting for a long time, and I think it is now time for us to step up, and I think it's especially easy for us to fall into despair because we're not the ones that are going to get sent to a concentration camp in El Salvador or Sudan or somewhere even worse. So I think that we are the ones that are now called to rip up racism and all of those related oppressions from the roots, because all of those oppressions are rooted together. We have to rip up racism and all of the other oppressions because, again, none of us can thrive until all of us can thrive. And I don't know what gets more theological than that, and I don't know what expresses love more than that.
Does sin exist in Unitarian Universalism?
Yes, not recycling, not including vegan and other options during meals. I actually want to talk about this a little bit, I think, later possibly. But I do think that we as Unitarian Universalists do have to develop a theology of evil, because we have to recognize that evil is happening in our world in order to combat that evil.
So those of you who were here last week will remember that I talked about seeing sin as injustice or sin as cruelty out there in the world instead of internalized and shameful within ourselves. I still hold to that, and I would say that within Unitarian Universalism, injustice certainly exists, because as long as we've been working on anti-racism, anti-oppression related things from abolition all the way through history, Selma, everything else, we're still not there, and we're still working on it, and we still have a lot more to do.
Is it my turn to ask a question?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is.
What is a very inspiring moment in UU history?
This one's really hard to choose only one. I think I'll say, because we're already kind of on the topic anyway, I'll say the teach-ins that happened about 8-ish years ago, getting close to a decade. Those of you who are newer to Unitarian Universalism may not be familiar with this history, but we had a program where all of the congregations throughout the country were invited to have teach-ins on white supremacy pretty much at the same time. And a lot of what we did was look at the work of Tima Okun and Kenny Jones and start talking about dismantling a culture of white supremacy. And I feel like that was a major shift for myself, but also for all of us as a faith tradition. I think for a long time we had looked at racism as something out there to combat and fight against. And then with these teach-ins, we started to understand better the work that we have to do internal to ourselves as individuals, as well as internal to our congregations. So it's not just about society. It's about how we embody things in our congregation and embody things in ourselves. And I'm going to expand that a little bit. While it was really focused on racism, I'm speaking to everybody, because there are so many other oppressions that we are also working on, whether they are related to LGBTQ or gender identity, which is the T and the Q, but especially right now, gender identity. And also, we've only really started talking about disability the last couple years.
Yeah. I would agree all that with all that, and I would add just more personally and more involving Unitarian Universalism within this church. For me, a really inspiring moment was when I was a new minister and I was in the airport in Boston, actually coming home from a meeting at the Unitarian Universalist Association, and our senior minister at the time, Meg Barnhouse, called me and asked me if I would be okay if we took a young woman into immigration sanctuary here at the church. And I burst into tears right there in the Boston airport, because I was so proud of this church, and that was such a meaningful moment. And then the way this church responded to that and really set up a place for her to live within the church and took part in eventually gaining freedom for that person was just so inspiring for me. Let's see. Do dogs and cats go to heaven?
Yes.
Agreed. Especially my dogs.
Yes. That was a simple answer. Yes. That's all you're getting. What is one of your current pet peeves?
Oh. Right now, it is when people look at our current political situation and say something like, this is not who we are as a country. And I'll admit it's a peeve because I want to think that too. And then I have to go, really? Because this is a country that was built on slavery. This is a country that was built on indentured servitude. And then after that, a continuation of working conditions that looked a lot like indentured servitude. It's a country that continued Jim Crow laws, had broken promises after the Civil War, segregation. I could go on and on. Lynching. White people used to pack a picnic basket and take their children to lynchings and hold them on their shoulders so they could see better. This is a country that didn't give women the vote for years and years and years, that even more recently didn't let women own credit cards or property. It's a country that engaged in imperialism throughout the world in order to build up and make profits for our corporations. It is a country that did not respond as a government and a society when my friends were dying of AIDS and, in fact, laughed and said they deserved it. So this is the country who we are and have been. It is. And we have to recognize that because it's not the country we want to be and we want to become. And what we have to do is demand that this country live up to the values that this country has always proclaimed but has not yet lived out. And in order to do that, I want to challenge a couple of almost theologies of progressive religion. One is that people are inherently good. I think we have to challenge that. It goes back to the question about sin. I think people have inherent worthiness, but whether we behave in ways that are helpful and good as regards others or harmful and sinful as regards others depends on the work that we do within ourselves to answer that call of love and depends on the education and in cultural environment we create for everyone. So we cannot assume that we will automatically do good because that's not true. We have to answer the call of love so that we engage in the good and we don't answer the call of our lesser angels and do harm. The other thing I would say is we have to get rid of this idea that the arc of the universe inevitably bends towards justice, because it doesn't. Left alone, the universe is random. We have to bend that arc toward justice, and that is up to us. And we have to realize that we have to do that not knowing what the outcome of that is going to be, because we have to know it's worth doing that work regardless, because that is the way that we know God, and that is the way that we know love. And that arc is going to be a jagged line, and we have to know that. So that is my pet peeve.
So there, Theodore Parker.
Yeah, I've got a gun in the... No, I'm kidding.
That Theodore Parker used to keep a gun in his desk in order to defend the fugitive slaves who lived in his congregation from those militias that were coming after them in Massachusetts.
And what's your pet peeve?
So bringing it down to the specifics of actual... day-to-day life for me, when people park their vehicles over the edge of the curb and block the sidewalk, so that people who use scooters and rollators and walkers and service dogs and guide sticks and everything else can't walk on the walk stop or roll on the sidewalks. I'm reminded of this because yesterday I was coming home to my apartment and there was a moving van blocking the two disabled spots and I was not able to park. I could go on and on about disability pet peeves.
So blocking the sidewalk is a sin within Unitarian Universalism.
Yes, it is. Don't do it. And I would add on to what Chris said, that, you know, this is a big vision talking about the country and the difference between the ideals we believe in and how our country actually behaves or actually is. The same is true for our UU congregations, people. We have wonderful ideas and values about welcoming people of diverse genders and diverse races and ethnicities and diverse orientations and diverse abilities, but we don't always actually do it. We have work to do. And I think it's okay to have work to do. What's not okay with me, the peeve part, is thinking that because we believe it makes it true.
Mm. Yeah, thank you. And related to that, what is the rationale behind the ungendering of the restrooms with the new signs?
Oh, okay. We are going to stop focusing on people's personal equipment, also known as genitalia. We're not going to figure out which reproductive organs people have or do not have and which bathrooms they belong in. Instead, we are going to focus on the equipment which is present in the bathroom, whether they are stalls or urinals. If urinals freak you out, I know it's true for a lot of people, don't go in the one that has urinals. And if, to be a little, I'm being a little flippant, my spouse is transgender, if that gives some perspective to my going on and on about this. But I also want to say, pastorally, I think this can activate some people who have a trauma history in terms of safety in bathrooms. And I get that, and we need to be pastoral in addressing that. And we have a single stall bathroom. So anyone who doesn't feel safe, doesn't feel comfortable, just use the single stall. Everybody else who's good mixing up the genders, use all the rest of them.
I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay. Do you have a favorite hymn?
Oh, my gosh. Morning Has Broken. I just love that one for some reason.
I have so many favorite hymns.
I know.
Hymns.
It's so hard to pick one.
I would say number 6. That is the one I want sung at my memorial service. That is how I want to live my life.
It's probably easier to answer the one that I don't like, but I'm not going to tell you that.
Okay.
Why don't we have more evening activities for adults without children?
Okay. Two answers for that.
Uh-huh.
One is we have a plethora of chalice circles and wellspring groups that really are adults only.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's important to have some adults only type things. And we are building a beloved community. And children are part of our beloved community. And children and youth of all ages belong in all of our worship services and in all of our Vesper services and in all of our social potluck, auction, everything else we do. So we need to really think about, are we separating ourselves out as adults because there's some kind of like intellectual discourse we're having that would be above their heads and they'd be bored to tears and or might not be quite appropriate to their little ears? Or are we kind of going in that direction of children are a bother, they should be seen but not heard? So we need to really think about that before we talk about whether and when we should have adults-only spacing. And we are understaffed. We are understaffed. And one of the areas that we need more help with is adult RE. So what we have been doing is putting a lot of stuff out in our newsletters that has to do with getting involved with adult RE, adult faith development, either through DRUM, which is the people of color BIPOC group, or Southern Region, or UUA activities where you can join in online and meet UUs from other congregations who are adults.
So we are running short on time, so we're going to make this the last question. I'll just add very quickly, I talked earlier about collective liberation theology, and a part of that theology that says I can only thrive unless all of you and everyone thrives is that one of the ways we thrive is appreciating difference. And that's true whether it's across culture or race or gender identity or whatever it might be. As Valerie Kaur says, you, each of you, and everyone else is just a part of me that I haven't gotten to know yet. And so for me to thrive, I have to get to know you, and I have to enjoy and respect that difference and learn from it. The same is true for multi-generational differences. And believe me, we can enhance our spirituality as adults by listening to what our children have to say. And that's why I would invite you, even if you're an adult without children, to come to the events that include adults with children and interact with the children, because it will help you to thrive to do that.
Absolutely.
And I have, there we go.
And speaking of Valerie Kaur, is Beth here by any chance? Can you stand up? This is Beth. She is going to be leading a year-long adult faith program on Valerie Kaur's work next year based on revolutionary love, and it is going to be amazing, and I'm so sad that I'm going to miss it. So if you have questions or want to start getting information, Beth is your person to talk to.
Please join me in our words for extinguishing our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together again. As we go out into our world now, may we continue to explore questions more profound than answers.
And may we also find some really good answers every now and then. May the congregation say amen.
Amen.
And blessed be.
Blessed be.
Go in peace.
This is a production of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, go to our website at austinuu.org.